This is The Late Shift, hosted by Gail Vasak-Slade on In-Depth Radio, News Talk 1010.
So when you watch an athlete hit that sweet spot with the thunder of the crowd in the background, you think to yourself, damn, pressure brings out the best in some people. Sometimes called clutch players, these people seem to get going just when the going seems impossible. If you think pressure is good for performance, well, you might be wrong. J.P. Palufry, his new book, Performing Under Pressure, draws on a survey of over 12,000 people, including executives, CEOs, Navy SEALs, and Olympic athletes, to show how pressure compromises performance. I'm really surprised to hear this, J.P., because I was one of the people that was under the impression that, you know, when the going gets tough, the tough get going.
Yeah, it's a myth, Gail. And unfortunately, most people buy into the myth. And the challenge is not the myth itself, but the consequences of the myth. So if we go in, here's the challenge. If we go into a high-pressure situation like a job interview or a negotiation or an athletic event, and we think, in order to be successful, I'm going to need to overperform or be perfect, that sets up, it's a losing strategy because, A, we won't be perfect. The data is pretty clear on that, and I'll share that in a minute. But number two, when things inevitably don't go as well as we hope, because that just happens, right? We're imperfect. If we think I have to be perfect to be successful, and now I'm being imperfect, we actually start to react to that, and it causes a vicious cycle. And so that is a real issue. And so here, let me just share some of the data. You know,
sure.
Michael Jordan, everyone knows the iconic Michael Jordan. When the pressure's on, he's at his best. And it's just not true. The data on Michael Jordan and every other NBA player, we outline this in the book, is that they shoot worse in the pressure moments, you know, the last few seconds of a game, than the regular season. In fact, you know, there's this whole idea that Reggie Jackson, right, Mr. October, he was called.
Yes,
because
yes.
He was so good in the playoffs. His October, when he hit his, you know, bunch of home runs, that was only equal to his, when you look at the data, only equal to his fifth best season in baseball. So,
right.
You know, so it's just not sure what happened.
So what we do is we make this crap up, is what you're saying.
That's exactly
what we do is we want to believe this so badly that we make the statistics fit the story we're trying to tell.
That's exactly right. And by the way, Hollywood doesn't help at all. This past week, I was at Universal Studios. Right.
Yeah.
I was in
Field of Dreams.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, we want the Hollywood ending. We want the hero to hit the home run and walk off home run. And it's just not true. And I mean, it wouldn't be so bad if it just wasn't true. But there's a consequence. Because, you know, having worked with some of these athletes who go into Olympic Games, they think, oh, my gosh, you know, the only way I'm going to be successful is if I'm perfect. And it's just, I mean, that sets up a losing strategy. So that's the big thing. But here's the other thing. The truth is that most of us are not Olympic athletes or Navy SEALs. We're, you know, doing a radio show. We're living a life. And so we all feel pressure. And unfortunately, our research has found that most people take a haphazard approach to managing pressure. They're not necessarily using the best tools or scientifically based strategies. And so this whole book is to help people use more of a scientific approach. Here's a best case, a best practice, in order to manage pressure more effectively. And, you know, our work is mainly with managers and leaders. And, you know, so we're trying to help mainly that population. But it's not just that group. I mean, the truth is these tools, these learnable tools, can be learned by anybody.
Okay, I want to get to the tools in a minute. But before we do, I want to talk a little bit about how pressure ends up sabotaging us.
Sure.
Because for years, when I had to speak publicly, I would puke.
Yes.
I would go and puke, and then I would go do my presentation. And there came a point where I had spoken so many times and bugged it up so many times that I realized that everything is recoverable.
That's it. There you go.
And yeah, and so that was when I stopped puking, because I thought to myself, if I stick my foot in it, I'll just look at the audience and go, sorry, I stuck my foot in it. That's not what I actually meant to say. And it became a conversation with the audience as opposed to me talking at them.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about how pressure ends up sabotaging. Because, you know, there are people out there who have to make a presentation at work. There are people who have to pitch a sale. There are every day there are ways in which pressure comes to bear on us, even if we're going in to ask for a raise, right?
You're right on, Gail. And what I love, I appreciate you sharing that story, because the truth is that everyone feels pressure. And, you know, your story illustrates what I think most of us feel, some of us hide better than others. Here's the deal. Pressure has three characteristics. And here's what they are. It's when the outcome is important to us. So you're hoping to do a good presentation, or someone wants you well on a job interview. Number two, it's when the outcome is uncertain. We're not sure if it's going to work out well or not. So it's the second characteristic. But it's the third one that really kills us. And the third one is when we are responsible for, or we're being judged on the outcome. And that being judged on the outcome, something we call social appraisal, that's the piece that gets us. That's why speaking in front of an audience is one of the most pressure-inducing situations, because we feel we're being judged. And when we're being judged, that's a destructive part that, boy, it's hard to manage. And that's why one of the most important things that, you know, any of the listeners, you know, you want to think about for yourself or your, you know, people you influence, whether young people or, you know, spouse, partners, is this whole piece around confidence. Mm-hmm. It is so important to make your center strong, because the truth is that when you are a little less worried about people judging you, I mean, this is pretty classic stuff, but when you are less sensitive to that, it actually means that you can move into more pressure-inducing situations, take more risk. I mean, we worked with U.S. Navy for years, and there's this great saying in the Navy, which I didn't know it until working there, which is this: ships are safe in the harbor, but that's not what ships are for.
Right.
You know, our lives are meant to be lived outside the harbor, where yes, there's more risk, but there's also more reward. And to me, if we can help people be better in pressure situations, they will be able to take more risk. They will get more reward in life in many ways, not just monetary reward, but just that pride of, now you have
absolutely that personal sense of satisfaction. Absolutely.
That's exactly it. And so for me, our whole organization, the Institute for Health and Human Potential, IHHP.com, we are passionate about helping kind of individuals and organizations kind of be and do their best when it matters most, because we want them to feel, hey, I did it. And I mean, there's nothing like, you know, as a parent, when I see, we have three kids, 18, 16, and 12, when I see my kids kind of take a bit of a risk and get out of the harbor, they feel great about it. You know, they feel tremendous anxiety at first, but they feel great. And to me, that is so exciting, because it's possible for anyone.
Right. When I come back, I have to go to break. When I come back, and I want to talk to you a little bit about how we manage that pressure, what it is we can do to let that pressure, open that pressure valve up a little bit and let out some of that steam, so we can get on with whatever it is we're trying to get done. Okay?
Sounds great.
Great. I'm Gail Vaz-Oxley. I'll be right back. You're listening to The Late Shift on In-Depth Radio News Talk 1010.
She just gets it and wants to give it to you. Now more of The Late Shift with Gail Vaz-Oxley on News Talk 1010.
I'm on the line right now with J.P. Paulufry, who is co-author of the book Performing Under Pressure, The Science of Doing Your Best When It Matters the Most. And we're talking about the impact that pressure has on performance. And we're just about to start talking about ways you can open up that valve to reduce the pressure. You know, JP, I think one of the things that reduced the pressure for me when I was doing public speaking was I came to realize that I could have a good time with this or not. I could allow this to be sort of a crippling, horrible experience, or I could go out there and I could play and have some fun. And I think that made a huge difference.
Yeah. You know, Gail, I mean, what's fantastic about that explanation is that it is actually one of the most important tools that we teach, which is that most people don't realize that they have a choice in how they view a situation. So whether it be public speaking or any pressure situation, we can choose to see it as a crisis, as a threat, to us, so to speak, and to our kind of our self-worth. Or we can see the same situation as a challenge, an opportunity, an adventure even. And so, you know, we actually have a choice, number one. So most people miss the fact that they have a choice, but we do. It's either a crisis or it's a challenge. And the most amazing part is that when we see it as a challenge, it has a huge impact on our brain and on our body. And I won't necessarily go through it all. It's in the book. People can read the science. But the whole point is that we have way more control over our brain and our body than we think.
Yes.
And, you know, the exciting part, and you've, you know, tuned into this, is that, I mean, these pressure situations, I mean, they can be a lot of fun. And if you see it that way, I mean, it becomes a lot more interesting, a lot more enjoyable way to live life. And then what happens is you feel like you want to approach more of those pressure situations as opposed to avoid. And so one of the things I'll say to readers is, as a pattern, look for this. When you feel pressure and you feel the physiological kind of manifestation of pressure in your body, do you, you know, like butterflies or whatever, heat in your head, do you avoid or do you approach? Because for a lot of people, they avoid. And my gosh, who wants to live a small life, right? It's like, get out of the harbor, take a risk. I mean, that's where the fun is. And by the way, here's the other thing. If we're a manager or leader or parent, we actually influence the people around us. They get influenced by our taking a bit of a risk. You know, they follow our model. And to me, that's an exciting part, because I hope my kids kind of see me taking a risk and not, you know, maybe being afraid, but still moving forward. And boy, that's how I can kind of give them the, hopefully, some of the skills just via modeling so that they can live a, you know, a full life.
Of course, the other alternative you have, I mean, is to just convince yourself that whatever it is you're doing is not that big a deal. So to trick yourself into thinking, you know, okay, so I'll do this, but this is not the be-all and end-all.
You know, that's a great point. So in the book, we talk about that we can sometimes get caught in kind of all or nothing thinking, where we think, oh my gosh, this one moment, everything matters. And in the moment, it feels that way. But if we can take a longer view, we start to realize any one moment is not the end of the world. I mean, great examples exist, whether it be, you know, Oprah Winfrey. People think, what a huge success. And, of course, she is a success. But she was fired from her first job as an anchor woman in Baltimore. You know, there's another story of Steven Spielberg. He goes down as one of the best directors of all time. Of course he was. But multiple times, six or seven times, he was refused entry to a California film school. And, you know, of course we know J.K. Rowling's of Harry Potter fame. She had 30 times the publisher said, no, this manuscript, the first Harry Potter, wouldn't fly. And so you think of all these three huge successes, and if in that moment they said, okay, this was the, you know, all or nothing, and I got nothing, it's over, where would they be? Well, you know, it just goes to show your point. It's not all or nothing. It's just...
No, it's not.
It's one moment, and hopefully you'll learn and grow from that moment, which is why, by the way, every moment is not a crisis. It's a challenge. It's an opportunity to grow. And so I got to tell you, I get so excited about this message because... You know, we're all feeling the
JP, we can't tell. We can't tell that you're excited about this message.
Absolutely.
Go ahead. No, you get very excited about this message.
I was just going to say that, you know, the one thing that's so neat is when you see, you know, when I work with an athlete, especially a young athlete who's never been to an Olympics, let's say.
Right.
And, you know, they kind of take a bit of a risk and the sky doesn't fall and they think, hey, I can do this. And you know, it's exciting because you see them grow and they kind of, they're 10 feet tall now and just the way they carry themselves. And the most amazing part, and you know this, Gail, is that when we walk in with that confidence, with that, hey, I'm going to take a bit of a risk, people actually respond to it. We're perceived differently.
Totally.
Yeah. It's amazing.
It absolutely is amazing. People do absolutely respond to it. One of the best things that ever happened to me was that I was working for a company when I was much younger that said I couldn't make any more money in an administrative role. And if I wanted to make more money, I had to go into sales. And so I went into sales. And again, a lot of puking, JP. There was a lot of puking involved because I had to do all this cold calling and it was not in my nature to do that. But, you know, after you hear no 2,000 times, no doesn't have the same impact on you that it did the first 10 times you heard it.
Oh, it's so true. It's so true.
And so, like water off a duck's back, you tell me no, and I just hear, okay, I haven't explained it well enough to you yet.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you a great story about that. When I was kind of being brought up in Burlington, my mom, my father, and my mother helped me kind of start a garbage bag selling business, door-to-door.
Right.
And you know, at first you're petrified and you're knocking on the door. You hope no one answers. You hope you can just like scamper away and no one, you know, you don't have to face anyone. And of course, just like you say, I mean, you do it once or twice and you realize they're not going to, you know, beat you up. And actually the odd person says yes. And you're like, wow. And you get so excited by the yeses, but the no's after a while, they lose their power over you.
Yes, they do.
I have to say that for me was a really formative experience. And I can't thank my mom and dad enough, because you kind of sit there and you go, it's not the end of the world. And in fact, now, you know, we started a business 17 years ago, and I honestly think it's because of an experience like that that allowed me to take this risk to start a business.
Yes.
Because it's like, oh, what the heck? If it goes bankrupt, whatever. It's not the end of the world. And so I actually have a lot, I think that no losing its power because of repetition is a great point.
Yes. My daughter is I was a huge chicken when I was growing up. My daughter is also a huge chicken, and she plays everything out in her head and worst case scenarios, everything every way from sideways so that she has a strategy for dealing with whatever, comes up because, you know, the anticipation of the worst happening is worse than actually living through it in your mind and coming up with a strategy for dealing with it.
You know, what's interesting is in our training program, so, you know, we do assessment training, coaching. One of the things that people learn is that the way our brain is designed, we awfulize, and we do that to protect ourselves. And that's fine when the kind of the stressor or the thing we're facing could eat us, you know, like the, you know, the dinosaur could eat us.
Dinosaur, but the truth
is that today,
we weren't around with dinosaurs, dude.
Fair enough. Thank you. Saber tooth tigers. Good point. You know, my team is going to burn me on that one, by the way. Thank you very much. That's all right. But you know, the tiger in the woods. But either way, today our kind of our challenge is not getting eaten. It's not a physical threat. It's more a psychological threat. It's more respect.
Absolutely.
It's more that social kind of, you know, appraisal.
Lose face.
So,
yes.
Absolutely. Losing face. Exactly. And so, you know, in so many ways, what's so neat is that when people take these courses, they kind of realize that's my brain, and it's doing that to protect me, but I don't have to believe everything I think.
It says, exactly.
And that's a really powerful insight.
And JP, that is like the key. It's like the key. That's the big light that comes on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, so another tip for everyone listening, go and meditate. Go do some mindfulness meditation, because one of the, again, very powerful tools is when you meditate. And you don't have to, by the way, for everyone, you don't have to believe any, you know, belief system
no,
to meditate.
No, it's
a skill.
It's
like an internal technology is how I think of it. But when you mindfully meditate, what happens is you start to see that there's a space between you and your thinking, and you don't have to believe everything you think. You can
things.
Kind of see thoughts come and go without the power. It's kind of like the nose losing its power after a while. And so one of the things that we really challenge learners in our programs is to become a student of human behavior, to really start to understand yourself, and not, you know, to look at your inner child and sing Kumbaya, but to really understand, what do I do under pressure, and how do I think, and does that serve me, or does it get in my way? And so, I mean, the exciting part is that, again, learnable skills, and meditation is a really powerful one as well.
Lovely to chat, JP. Thank you so much for joining me.
The pleasure is all mine. And my mom is so excited that I'm being interviewed by you, Gail. So thank you.
You tell your mom I send her a big squishy hug.
I will, for sure. Thank you for having me.
Okay, you take care. My pleasure.
Bye-bye.